All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Nerdcast, brought to you by Project Nerd. It is episode 124.
Greetings, my friend. This is the brain of TV's Pinky in the Brain. You are listening to the Nerdcast, but what you're really listening to are subliminal messages saying, I will obey brain. I will obey brain. I will obey brain. I will obey brain. Yes!
How's everyone doing tonight? We have got a special guest tonight. We're down a couple members, but you've got me, Tyler, here running the ship. We got Adam hanging out, just being Adam.
Doing Adam-type things, yeah.
Doing Adam-like things. And we have our good friend and special guest from Worst Comic Podcast Ever, Mr. John Holloway. What is happening, John?
Hey, everybody. Glad to be here. Thanks a lot for having me, guys. I'm certainly no Iggy or Aaron, but I will do my best to fill in for one evening here.
You are prettier than both, though, John. Throw that out there.
Right. If they were in some sort of transporter accident where they were merged into some linear human being, I would be more attractive than that result. But I'm not sure that your original statement stands, but I'll take it.
I don't know. Do they come out as like a mesh of the two, or is it some Cronenberg-esque, like, just monstrosity?
Some linear combination. I'm not sure what proportion of each.
Fair enough. So, for the second week in a row, we will definitely get to talk about comics again, because we have a guest on here who reads comics, which is super exciting. But I guess we'll knock out a few things. Anyone see any movies this week? I still have yet to go see Apocalypse, but I did catch Pop Star, Never Stop, Never Stopping. And I can definitely recommend it. It's barely a movie. Like, the narrative thread just barely holds together. But there were many moments in the movie where I just had to almost, like, compose myself because I was laughing so hard at just ridiculousness. So,
very nice. Well, I did go see X-Men Apocalypse. I didn't get a chance to go see that. I went and saw it on the cheap. So the 11:30 a.m. $4.99 movie. So I didn't contribute all I could to the cause. My friend Jerry said, one of my other co-hosts on the Worst Comic Podcast Ever, he said, I've seen better X-Men movies and I've seen worse X-Men movies. And I would say that's a pretty fair assessment of it. It's there. There's a lot of action. It's definitely apocalyptically inclined. At the end, when things are resolved and everybody's like, whew, okay, that wasn't too bad. I'm like, the entire infrastructure of every major urban city has been destroyed, but okay, everything's fine. We're all right. I thought the beginning of the movie started off really strong. I thought they set up Apocalypse really well. We got to know him. We got to understand what his deal was. And that was probably some of my favorite scenes in the whole movie. Then we got introduced to a bunch of new mutants, but we didn't really get to know them very well. And then there's some fighting. So I thought that, Singer really loves Magneto. Man, we have a lot of Magneto FaceTime. We have some J-Law FaceTime, and she's pretty much J-Law. She's not blue very much. They definitely, I don't know if that's her or them, they want us to see J-Law. She's a hook for girls to get into the movie, I think. And we get kind of introduced a little bit to Cyclops and Jean Grey and Nightcrawler and Storm, but we don't really get to understand their motivations for the most part. They're just kind of all thrown in, but it's pretty much Professor X, Magneto, Mystique. I definitely could have used a lot more Psylocke, Olivia Munn. For all the videos we saw of her practicing all of her ninja skills, it's mostly her CGI sword thing that's kind of in there. So I could have used a lot more of her. But this movie dropped a lot. And for me, there's a couple reasons for it. But I think there's some fatigue with X-Men. I think people are kind of getting over X-Men a little bit. And I also think I just don't think people associate with these characters very much. I don't think there were things in the trailers to get people excited about it. People are going to go see any movie with Iron Man in it. They may not necessarily, it may not be a great movie, might be Iron Man, 3 or whatever, but, or 2, but, people are going to go see an Iron Man movie. People are going to go see Captain America. But I don't think people know the X-Men that much. I just don't think there was anything in the trailer that got people that jazzed about it. So, you know, we'll see. Now, I did want to ask you guys, what was your take on the sign? So you guys, I'm sure, heard the kerfuffle about the billboard, the big banner in L.A. About X-Men. Did you hear about that?
Adam's nodding his head. I did not. So I obviously missed some big nerd news. What's
Tyler,
going
on? What have you been doing, man?
I've been busy. I've been working. What's up? What happened?
That was a kerfuffle. There was a large billboard, I think, on the highway and the freeway coming into L.A., and it shows Apocalypse, and he is holding Mystique by the throat. I don't even remember what the tag or anything said, but the words were not the issue that people had with the sign. People had an issue with, hey, look, there's a dude holding a woman by the throat. And that's supposed to be an advertisement for me to go see this movie. And I don't remember who it was, kind of launched something on Twitter that kind of got it all started. And then my initial reaction before I saw the sign was, oh, well, hey, they're duking it out. But when I saw the sign, it's like, you know, everybody started talking about the context. Well, the context of the movie is she's a badass and she's going at it with Apocalypse or whatever. I'm like, hey, I didn't have a problem with the scene in the movie. The problem I have is if I'm driving my kid in my car along the highway and all of a sudden I just see a sign and the only context I have, because, hey, listen, the average person, 99.99% of the population doesn't know who Apocalypse or Mystique or even the X-Men are. All they say is, hey, all of a sudden I look out and me and my kids see this blue dude who's choking this blue woman apparently to death. And that's the only context I have for this. Yeah, I think that's really weird. And that's just a very, very awkward sign to drive by and see. In the context of the movie, it was totally fine.
Yeah, I definitely have Googled it now and I'm looking at the image and probably not the best production still to use for a giant billboard. And right. The tag doesn't make it better. The tag is definitely only the strong will survive.
Right.
So that's not helping matters anymore.
No, it doesn't help. Yeah, it definitely doesn't help. Yeah, so anyway, it baffles me sometimes the number of people that had to go through to clear that somebody didn't just say, you know what, maybe that's not the image. Why can we just throw an image of the Four Horsemen or Apocalypse and the Four Horsemen or whatever? We could get a totally cool image, Angel in the background with his wings spread and, you know, whatever we can get.
Storm riding lightning and that. Yeah, you can make one real easy.
Any number of things that you can do. And I just don't think, and they use Mystique Blue, who now people don't even see Jennifer Lawrence. Like, I think if you're going to promote it with Jennifer Lawrence, hell, put up Jennifer Lawrence's face on there and let that sell some tickets.
Yeah, I feel like, I mean, the scene's obviously in the trailers, and I can definitely say from if I had seen the movie, I can't imagine the scene's probably that bad, but this specific still. And obviously people are complaining, like, it's in the movie, it's not that bad. But at the same time, like, it's not that it's that bad or that good. It's that there are a million other pictures you could have used that would not have caused a, as John put it, kerfuffle. So
right. And people like, hey, people know that people who are into comics way overestimate how much everyone else outside of comics knows about comics. Like, they all think, hey guys, everyone knows Mystique is this crazy awesome person. No, they don't know that. And if you're only counting on the people who already know that to come see the movie, they were already going to come see the movie. If you want a comic book movie to be a success, you got to get more than the comic book audience. They're going to come anyway. You already got them. You got to get the other people to come. So,
well, it's interesting. I think you brought up a good point and something I never thought about with the X-Men. So we talk about how Marvel did the rest of the Avengers movies. So we got the 4 or 5 character movies first. With right. In credit scene kind of hinting at something larger. And then you get an Avengers movie where they kind of come together to solve a big problem. We kind of criticize Warner Brothers for doing basically the opposite with Batman versus Superman and launching their series as we're going to do a Justice League movie, 2-part movie, maybe. I don't know what they're doing anymore. And then launch into the individual character movies after that. And it seems like, you know, I never really thought that, man, people maybe don't know who the X-Men are. Like, you're going to go watch this team of cool people that have these really, you know, intense and complex relationships and all of the power that they have. And then you're not really going to explain any of that. Like, the connection between, you know, Havoc and Cyclops and Jean Grey and all that kind of stuff. I mean, that's, it's background stuff for comic book fans. Like, yeah, I know who they are in relation to each other, or at least who they were in the comics and kind of who they are in the movie, but you don't really get a whole lot of that. So it's interesting to think that that may be leading to the numbers issue there. John, I hadn't thought about that before.
Yeah. Well, and X-Men have always been tricky because there's plenty of comic readers. There's plenty of Marvel readers who are not familiar with all the X-Men because they're not X-Men readers. Because for the longest time, there was the Marvel Universe, and then sometimes the X-Men had something to do with it. But most of the time, X-Men had their own thing going on. Like, there's the X-Men universe, the Marvel universe, I guess maybe like the cosmic universe. But like Marvel, you could be a diehard Marvel reader and not run into the X-Men that often. And they always are, with the exception of like Wolverine and some of the spin, like they're a team. And I think if you're not a big X-Men, and like that's one of the things in this one, I mean, one of the big complaints, and John kind of touched on it, is it feels cluttered. They drop a lot of characters in. You don't get a lot of development. That's true of a lot of them. Like, I don't feel like of all the X-Men movies, still kind of cluttered, some more so than others. But part of it is a lot of the X-Men movies have treated so many characters that if you were a X-Men reader, you would feel shorted by it because they'll drop all these characters in there. I mean, I feel like sometimes they'll treat a lot of these characters like Star Wars treats characters in the cantina. Like, they're there to be background images. So you can catch it. Right. Oh man, that was that character, or that was that guy, or that was that cool guy, like to post about on the internet. Otherwise they're not there to serve any plot purpose or anything. They're just there to be so that someone can it had all of its own problems, but The Last Stand was terrible about that. The number of characters that they introduced that had full-on scenes that did things that they never even said their name. And if you weren't like diehard into X-Men, you had no idea you had to go to the internet after you saw the movie. Like, so who was that again? All right. Why do I care? I don't know. No one said their name. They were a bad guy and they had a big fight with a person in a hallway, but I couldn't tell you who or what or why they were there.
Yeah, and the continuity on those has gotten so jumbled, you know, because we get Cyclops. Yes, Cyclops has powers and everything. And in the original X-Men, you had, you know, Cyclops, Beast, Iceman, Jean Grey, and Angel. So back in the day. So now those guys are there, but they're not the first class of X-Men. There was this other first class. And their bad guys were way more powerful than the X-Men. It was one thing when you had this jumble of odd little powers. And now you've got Nightcrawler who could teleport. But in First Class, the bad guy was kind of weird red demon-looking dude. And his teleporting powers were way stronger than Nightcrawler's. I'm like, it seems like we're getting less powerful, except Jean Grey, who's going to Phoenix out. But yeah.
Yeah. Well, and they've also used those characters like, in ways that, you know, they're not, I don't know if it's alienating, but it's, I think I know some diehard X-Men probably don't deal with it because like the relationship comic wise between, like, you specifically brought up Azrael, Mystique, Nightcrawler, there's a whole like,
right.
There's a whole like 20 years of shit there that they don't even touch on. And like, it's out of context. It's out of order. Like, there's characters showing up in First Class who probably weren't even alive in the 60s as far as X-Men continuity is concerned, or hadn't even been in the comics in the 60s. But at the same time, like, it's a different venue. It's a different medium. You got to do what you got to do. But it's all about, like, we're going to be true to the characters to a point until we don't want to be. And then at some point as a viewer or as a creator, you have to decide, like, how much does that matter and how much do I just want a good movie? But I don't know.
Yeah, those original X-Men movies, we had Mystique, and she was badass. I mean, she was awesome. But we get, you know, J-Law, Mystique, and not that she's not cool, but they turned her into a good, she's now basically the backbone of the X-Men. I mean, by the end of this movie, she is the leader of the X-Men. And, you know, I just feel like we get this thing where we get, and I think it's especially true with female characters. They start to get popular and then you got to turn them good because we don't want him to be a bad person. So Poison Ivy, you know, they've talked about Poison Ivy being a character and stuff. People are like, well, don't make her an eco-terrorist. She needs to be a good, she needs to be good. So now Poison Ivy and Harley Quinn, you know what? She really needs to be good. She's chaotic good, or she's just not as bad as the people that she's fighting. But we like to take those characters and turn them into good characters when we like them. So the, if you're a bad female character, but you get popular, we're going to turn you good. So I don't know. It's not bad. It's okay.
Tyler, you're trying to talk and you're muted there, buddy.
You know, you can be bad and still make them relatable or make them something you identify with, you know, make them bad guys. But I don't know. I think.
Right. I'd watch a Darth Vader movie and you don't need to make him a good guy to show me a really awesome Darth Vader movie.
You know, Marvel got the rights back to the Star Wars movie, to the Star Wars comics, and the Darth Vader comic was my favorite one because he was just unapologetically bad, and he ends up with this cool female character who's kind of an archaeologist, and she kind of teams up with him mostly because he's going to do cool stuff, and she just wants to be around, and she gets a sort of evil version of R2 and C-3PO, who's the R2-D2 is just armed to the teeth, and the C-3PO dude just loves to torture humans. I mean, that's basically his, like, favorite part. And it was great. Like, there was no Darth Vader's a good guy. He's not a good guy. And I loved it. It was dead on perfect.
Yeah. Well, I mean, whatever else is said, like, X-Men is a tricky property to play with. But Fox has doubled down on, you know, we're going to choose the ones that are the characters. These are the ones that drive it. And then Wolverine. So We have whoever we decide to be in each movie and then Wolverine. And that's it. Like, what does Fox do when Jackman's out? Do they make another Wolverine? Do they latch on to someone else to be the new flagship face? Or is it just, or I don't know, Deadpool movies from here on out?
Deadpool coattails, man.
Just ride that Deadpool train.
Mm-hmm. Until people stop going to see those movies, and then you find someone else to play Logan. But otherwise, yep, you just latch onto Ryan Reynolds and let him do what he wants to do in Deadpool suit.
Yeah, and it's tough because Hugh Jackman has been so perfect. I mean, and I'm not saying the Wolverine movies have been good, but that's good casting. I think him as Wolverine is good casting. But Ryan Reynolds is Deadpool. I mean, people are going to – Deadpool 2, like, you can just start selling tickets to that thing now. And people are going to rush to it. And I think Suicide Squad is going to, I think it's maybe ironic, but I think Suicide Squad's going to benefit a little bit from Deadpool in that I think people have seen what you can do with a sort of an R-rated, more aggressive movie and you can make it over the top violent and fun and put an R on it. And you know, and just do that. And I think it's a great idea because I think Batman Superman went up to that R, and now it sounds like the extras that, but there was no, it wasn't fun. It wasn't as
right.
Fun.
Yeah, I don't know if Warner Brothers can make a fun movie right now, not in a superhero title anyway.
It doesn't have to be fun. Like The Dark Knight wasn't fun, but at least it was good. Like make your choice. Like do right. The other. You have to do one. But it's funny you bring that up because it is official today. The MPAA has rated Suicide Squad a PG-13.
Oh, they did come in 13. Okay.
Yep. So they came in under 13. Although David Ayer, who's the filmmaker, has indicated that he's open to R-rated sequels. And there's at least one spinoff already with Harley Quinn in the works. But the actual movie itself is going to be PG-13 that we see in August. So.
I wonder if we'll get like the DVD version of Batman v Superman is supposed to be R. I wonder if we'll get that same thing. I would not be surprised at all if there's an R, an unrated or whatever version of the Suicide Squad thing. And my guess is it's probably PG-13 because it's only violence and not sex. So we're pretty funny on where the line is with sex and nudity compared to where the line is with violence. So in America.
Yeah. And I think the thing about Deadpool is Deadpool was going to be rated R based alone on the Ryan Reynolds, Marina Bakarin scene. So then they said screw it and took all of the violence up to 11. They're like, we're going to have bullets coming out of back of heads and we're going to, you know, it's going to splatter bodies everywhere. Cause whatever, we already are. Cause we had the sex in here. So We went to a strip club, so let's just double down on the violence because no one's going to give a shit about that.
Yeah, well, I had people ask me, I said, why is this rated? Is it okay for my 12-year-old? I'm like, well, I'm not letting my 12-year-old see it. Like, I'm not letting my wife see that movie. But I said it's only rated R for the language, violence, and sex. Other than that, it's completely, like, other than the triple crown of R rating, it's pretty much got it all. So
yeah, other than that, it's just a cool buddy revenge comedy. Like, but otherwise, I mean, yeah, there's a, you know, fair number of horribleness going on in there.
Yeah. And hey, I loved it, but yeah, it's rated R for a reason and a good, and a couple, maybe 300 reasons, but yeah, but I agree. Go for it. Like, if you're going to do R, go for it and just make it fun. Over the top RoboCop. We're going to have a blast.
Yeah. And I really thought after Deadpool that this would stay R, and especially after Deadpool's success and the fact that they went back and did all those reshoots for Suicide Squad, that they were angling for an R. And now I'm wondering if the reshoots were to bring it down to PG-13, or if, you know, Warner Brothers just doesn't have enough faith in an R-rated movie even after Deadpool. Because when it's all said and done, with the exception of Deadpool, R-rated movies don't make money. Like, that's not what they, unless you're Passion of the Christ or The Hangover, like, you don't make money as an R-rated movie. Like,
yeah, totally. And I think you may be right. I think they also did it, from what I understand, they want to lighten it up. They want to lighten their movies up. And Jeff Johns, the chief creative officer for DC, is now going to be more involved with movies. And he said, we're not going to have another Superman movie like that. That the movies are going to be lighter. They're going to be more upbeat. And that's the way that DC is taking their comics with the Rebirth. They want it to be lighter. They want it to be more hopeful. And I hope that they execute it. And so somebody said, I read somewhere that they were trying to do it to add more jokes in. And people were like, well, the trailer's got lots of jokes. And I said, yeah, I heard the trailer had all the jokes.
Right. Yeah. If people like that trailer and all the funny moments are in that trailer, people aren't going to like that movie.
that's a surefire way
to make people really unhappy.
Yeah, I don't want to see every joke coming up before it's, oh, here's the part where she's going to be half naked and everybody stops to look at her. And saw that already.
Yeah, and then we heard about, speaking of reshoots, apparently, talk about panicking, we talk about lightening it up. The amount of just crazy, speculation around how much of Rogue One are they reshooting? Mm-hmm. Why are they reshooting? Was it because it was bad? Was it because of, I mean, between the number of press releases and the number of articles that have been written, it's either they were trying to make it more in the vein of old classic Star Wars, you know, serial space opera fun, or it was because the final script didn't match what they actually shot, or they're shooting over half of it over again because it's just damage control and they don't like the final product. Like, I don't know how much to read into this stuff because it's Star Wars. Like, anything that any media that covers it is going to be magnified to the nth degree, especially because of how successful the reboot was. I don't know. I mean, does this concern you? Usually when I hear reshoots, that makes me immediately worried about the quality of the movie that we'll eventually get, because reshoots usually never mean a good thing. At the same time, like, if it is reshooting it to lighten it and make it more like, you know, every other Star Wars movie, is that super necessary? Like, we have our episodes that'll be those movies. Like, is it okay for the spinoff, the side stories to be, you know, a darker tone or be a different type of movie? Maybe, you know, explore some other genres in the Star Wars universe where your episodes, you know, 7, 8, 9 can be your big space opera Skywalker family stories. So I guess just general thoughts from you guys around how concerned are you by all the reports coming out about the Rogue One reshoots?
I will. I mean, I'm with you, Tyler. Reshoots in general principle scare me. If you are to believe, you know, you can pick what you want to believe from all the stories, because like you said, the speculation is rampant right now. And if you're going to like, if you're going to pick and choose what you're going to believe, I would pick that they are concerned that it didn't live up to 7. And so they're going to make it better. They are going to do what they think they need to do to make it better. And if that's the case, I'm more okay with that than I am with changing the tone of the movie and reshoots to lighten it to be more like the episodes. I'm perfectly fine with the episodes being their own thing and the spinoff movies while kind of sharing in that same world and that same universe and living in time periods that we don't get a lot of from the episodes, but we kind of know the overarching story. Like, I mean, we know Rogue One kind of, we know what happens in the end. They get the plans. Like we know what happens because we've seen that in Episode 4. So we know they get the plans. So it's okay for me for that movie to be a little bit darker throughout because I know it works out. Many Banthans died to get us those plans. And so I'm okay with seeing many of them die.
Yeah, but that was the plans for the second Death Star, not the first
one. Oh, that was the second one? Oh,
the Bothans died getting us the second.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I mean,
don't get me wrong. People probably died getting
the first. Yeah, I would assume many people died ones, getting the root of their plans.
Not necessarily Bothan spies.
Okay. Yeah. No, well, I mean,
some general contractor somewhere who didn't turn in his copy of the plans that is in big trouble with the
Emperor. Well, and I have a friend who's a contractor, and when you take a job like that, you know what you're getting yourself into.
I guess it depends on why they're doing the reshoots. If they're doing the reshoots to lighten the tone or change the tone, that makes me definitely more afraid for a movie than if they're doing it to improve the quality a little bit because in the end they don't think it measures up. I mean, 7 set the bar, or not? Yeah, 7 set the bar exceptionally high when it comes to the Star Wars properties. And so, if they feel like they need to do a little bit better than what they did, that's probably a good sign.
You know, it's interesting too because this is not because. I talked to my students a little bit about this, and we were talking about movies coming up before the end of the school year. And see, a lot of them don't realize that they're like, so now we're already getting another picture with Rey and everything. And I go, no, this isn't that. I think a lot of people are going to be confused at first that this is not a Star Wars, this is not 8. But people get confused with all that. So, you know, sometimes if you think in terms of a trilogy arc, your second movie, a lot of times we'll have kind of a downward tone because you want to darken it up so that the third movie of the trilogy can bring it back up again. You know, it's the second act. And this movie is not the second act. I think this is just a standalone movie. I mean, it's Rogue One. It's its own thing. We're not going to have a Rogue Two or Rogue One Two. I don't think we're going to have that. So this movie has to stand alone. So where do you hit it? Tone-wise, is this a different picture of what the dirty underside of the rebellion and what goes into that? So it's interesting to play into that tone because if 8 is going to be a little darker just because it's the second movie in the trilogy, is Rogue One too dark to fall in between those two? And it'll be interesting to see it.
And I mean, that's a legitimate concern for a franchise that is Star Wars. Like if this movie wasn't being released immediately a year after
right
reboot and a year prior to the second chapter. Cause like you said, like the, there was all the reports that came out about the reshoots and tons of speculation. Then Entertainment Weekly did the thing last weekend saying basically, hey, you know, it's not that bad. Here's what we're doing. Like we're just, you know, they're spoofing this up and changing this. And then now reports and Entertainment Weekly and Disney have a pretty, you know, like Entertainment Weekly is usually someone who's going to have, Is it PR puffing from Disney to try and get people back okay, or is it legit? But then, like, the playlist came out just a couple days ago saying that, hey, this is not, like, this is as much as 40% of the movie, and they're bringing in, what's his name, Tony Gilroy from, you know, like, Bourne Legacy, Michael Clayton, stuff like that, and he's, if not only helping with it, like, actually supervising and helming the reshoots himself. Cause it was rumored already before that he'd come in to like help punch up the script and that some other people had worked on it. Like it gets a little inside baseball if you really go down the rabbit hole with it, like Hollywood inside baseball. But the sounds of it is like the newest stuff makes it, I was not concerned when I heard the first rumblings of it. I was like, yeah, it's whatever. Like reshoots are a thing and it's a big franchise and Disney's hedging their bets. Then like when, you know, damage control stuff started kind of pouring out of Disney. I was like, ah, we'll see. And then now this newer stuff's like, I'm still going to go see it, but apparently, you know, Gareth Edwards delivered a very dark and gritty war movie that Disney just was afraid, like you guys said, would not play well to the $2 billion audience that went and saw the first, you know, happy-go-lucky redo of A New Hope. So, but I'm okay with dark and gritty Star Wars stories, but like you said, like they're not making that movie for me, who read a lot of the EU and played every Star Wars video game ever and can tell you way too many things about Bothans and Mandalorians and shit like that. They're making it for the people who spent $2 billion to see it in theaters.
Right. It's because they're going to get your 10 bucks already. They don't need to cater to you. They're getting your $10 as long as they're somewhere in there. Star Wars, those two words are somewhere in the title. Yeah. You're going to get my money. You're going to get my money probably Thursday night, maybe again on Friday, maybe again on Sunday, depending on how good of a job you do, but you're getting my money at least once that weekend.
At the same time, I'd like Disney to be okay with, you know, making movies that don't have to necessarily fit the, you know, everything's going to be okay, space opera, you know, high adventure that the originals were and that the new ones are aiming to be. But I can see their concern, I guess.
Well, every time Disney's tried to do it, it's bit them in the butt. Like, I don't think it would happen with Star Wars because it is a big enough franchise on its own. It's not Disney's Star Wars. And so many of the movies that they make, whether it's, you know, they are all are seen as a Disney movie. And so Disney has its own reputation on how it needs, what it needs to live up to. And so I think that's hurt them a little bit when they try to get away from a Disney movie, you know, air quotes around Disney, whatever that means to you.
Zootopia just broke $1 billion, so they've still got that thing figured out.
Yeah, no, animated movies, they're going to do just fine. I'm not worried that, you know, Disney's going to have to fold up their movie studio after, you know, a bad film for by any means.
There we go. I was muted. I'm a teacher. I'm used to being in charge of the show. Yeah, they're going to be totally fine, but I think they've got to be, you know, they want to keep this Star Wars momentum going for a long time, and they don't want movie two. You know, movie two's got to be pretty great. I would love to see a future Star Wars movie where the threat is not a giant spherical weapon. That would be amazing. That would be really, really cool. Cause I'm a little fatigued on the giant spherical weapon.
Regular size spherical weapon, or are we thinking giant, you know, rhombus? Like, what do you have in mind?
Right. Either of those would be fantastic change of pace. But yeah, just the big thing that blows up planets that are strangely undefined distances away. My two cents.
There's John's physics teacher.
I know. At this point, I'm satisfied if I could get Luke Skywalker to say and or do something. So that happens. I'm on board.
He looked stern. That's a thing. He was doing a thing.
I need to see him, you know, I need to see what's happened from a Jedi Master who's just been off on his own doing his thing. Like, I need to see him just wreck some people. I need to see, like, Rey, like, hanging out, talking to him, and then, like, you know, the Knights of Ren or something show up, and I want him to single-handedly, with very little thought, just wipe the floor with them in true, like, badass Jedi fashion.
Well, I would be okay with that.
You've got to wait till next December for that one. Sorry.
I need him to straight up pull, like, a Mace Windu on Clone Wars, the animated series, the original one, not the 3D one, where he, like, takes his hat off and puts down his water bottle and takes on an entire droid army and just destroys everything and then picks his hat up and walks off.
Well, especially when we got to hear his voiceover on the trailer, of the trailer with his hand on R2, and you're like, oh, we're going to get some Luke's back. And no, we heard more in the trailer. We heard more in the trailer than we heard from him at all in the movie. Come on, you're killing me.
And we don't have that movie for another year and a half, and I could still just talk about that the entire episode. Or Rogue One. I mean, let me some Star Wars. I mean, while we're on movies, we'll quickly run down, like, so the box office, we had Ninja Turtles 2 opened to a very soft $35 million. I mean, it won the weekend with practically no money made. So in its first 3 to 4 days, it's made just barely more than half of what the first new TMNT made. So not really, I don't think, what the makers behind that were looking for. X-Men obviously saw a huge drop, and it's now 2 weeks, I guess, that the sequel to Alice in Wonderland that never needed to be made came out and has made pretty much no money whatsoever. I think it's 2 weeks now and it's at maybe 50 million. So I don't know. I mean, is there anything, I just went and saw Popstar, which no one went and saw. Like, it made no money over the weekend. So, I mean, this is not the greatest time to be releasing a film right now, but I also I don't know what the next film that's coming out that's going to actually make more than 50, 60 million on a weekend at the box office is going to be. What's coming up that's going to do something? I mean, maybe Suicide Squad, I guess.
Yeah, do we get into August with Suicide Squad, or is that in July? Yeah. So, I guess
I don't know. I guess the big question is, and I honestly don't know the answer, just because sometimes these late reboots, like hitting a target audience, work, and sometimes they don't. Does Independence Day open to just incredible amounts of money, or does it go out and make a quiet 40, 50, 60 million?
No, because they put it in June. It opens in June. Why doesn't it open in Independence Day weekend?
They did that with the first one. I don't get that at all.
Right. Why does a movie titled Independence Day not open on or around July 4th? Why is it a week and a half ahead of time? It's the most ridiculous plan I've ever heard of. And because of that, I think they don't make a huge opening weekend. So I'd put them 40 million, maybe.
I think it'll do well. Obviously, that movie's going to sell some tickets because there's not a lot else action-y wise that's really on my radar beyond that. But I'm not terribly excited for the new Independence Day movie, and I feel like it's kind of like X-Men. This X-Men movie is. The apocalypticness of it is so over the top. Like, I feel like even if we win, what have we won? We've won the ash heap. Like, yay, hey, everybody, we can stand on the pile of rubble.
And I mean, it's looking better than Metropolis and Gotham.
At least that was isolated to one city. At least it was one city. It wasn't global apocalypse. Oh, we narrowly avoided it. Like, I don't think we did.
I did lie a little bit. There is one more movie that will have a huge opening, and that's because we do get Finding Dory this month.
So, oh, yeah, that'll be big.
Pixar movie. Sequel to probably one of the best, if not the best, Pixar movie. Like, that's going to make tons of money. And obviously, I'm not the target demo, so I don't partake of the media in which it's advertised in, but I don't feel like I've seen the typical Disney marketing rush for that one.
It's funny, what I feel like I've seen more of are people, aquarium enthusiasts, breeders, and sellers of fish saying, we can't breed the blue tang, which is the fish that Dory is. We cannot breed them in captivity, so we can only capture them, which is the whole plot of the first movie. The bad guy is the person that goes on the reef and captures the fish. And so there's this really weird dichotomy, like this just, it doesn't mesh well with, the story that they told in Finding Nemo. And I worked at a pet store, and the uptick in clownfish sales after that was ridiculous. And quite ironic, I think. And so I've seen more about that than I have like actual advertisements for the movie.
That's funny.
I don't know. I mean, we'll see that one in June, and then maybe Independence Day. And then July, we've got, 5 weekends of maybes, and then I don't knows. Like, so July 1st is the big opener will be the BFG. So it's Steven Spielberg, it's Roald Dahl, it's Disney. Like, it could make all the money, or no one could go and see it.
Right.
And then July 8th, we get The Secret Life of Pets, which is another animated, and I think is that DreamWorks? Or I think it's probably DreamWorks, so maybe. It's animated. And then we get Mike and Dave Need Wedding Dates, which is R, so it'll do that business. Then July 15th, I have no idea what to predict for Ghostbusters whatsoever. The backlash has been confusing and angering. And, like, the problem is, like, there's plenty of reasons to be upset with the movie, but the reasons that are the most loud are the ones that just, like, that's a dumb reason to not go see the movie. Like, I'm sorry that we're not using the same four dudes that were in this movie 30 years ago. Get off it.
Right.
And then Star Trek, which I'm not entirely sure is still coming out, because I don't think Paramount has just completely stopped marketing for it whatsoever, just stopped talking about it in any way, shape, or form after the big splash. And then,
yeah, I wonder if that's like they're going to make a push here coming up, or if that's we're going to cut our losses and save the money that we can
save the money. And then the right, other yeah. one is, and I'm granted it's still a little ways off, but I at the fact that it's coming out in basically 2 months or a month and a half, other than the teaser trailer, like, so, and then there's a sort of theatrical trailer, like, we're getting a new Jason Bourne movie starring Matt Damon and no one's talking about it.
Right.
That trailer looks good too. I mean, yeah. I'm on board with what they're doing, right?
Paul Greengrass is back. Matt Damon's back. They threw in Alicia Vikander and Tommy Lee Jones. Like, why is this not the only thing that anyone's talking about?
Sometimes I wonder if they don't like the Star Trek movie. I'm like, are they worried that they're going to get people so ramped up for that they got to have some sci-fi action that then they're just going to go see Independence Day? Like, oh, I'd love to go see Star Trek, but man, Independence Day is out now. I'll go see that. And then it's like, well, now I can't go see Star Trek. I've already spent my movie, apocalyptic movie money on that. I'm a Star Trek guy, and I'm not super excited about this movie.
I'm a big Star Trek guy too. And despite the problems with it, I loved the first one. I like the idea of the way they rebooted it, even though I don't know what the new obsession with is your reboots have to be in universe reboots. Like you can't just reboot a franchise. You have to, in the story, in the movie, explain how it's being rebooted, like with actual logic between the first X-Men Days of Future Past and now Star Trek. Like we had to, in the movie, explain how we're rebooting the movie, which made zero sense to me. Like you're rebooting it. It's cool. Like, don't worry about it. Like can you imagine
just,
if like,
make another Enterprise. We're good.
At the beginning of Batman Begins, like Christopher Nolan had to put something in to explain like what happened to Michael Kilmer and George Clooney. And I lost the thread there cause I was so excited about that. But then at the same time, like as much as I loved the first Star Trek movie but I couldn't get past the second one. Like there was just so much wrong with it. And I still enjoyed it, but it wasn't a Star Trek movie anymore. It was a big sci-fi movie that put Star Trek on the name and stole basically the plot of, you know, Wrath of Khan and just made it bad and flipped the roles. I don't know. There was a lot wrong with that one. And then the flying through space scene with the asteroid field and the spacesuits, like just whatever. I'm out.
See, to me, that's as bad though as Empire with them flying through an asteroid field. It's like that's not what an asteroid feels like at all. Like not at all. There'd be no asteroid field. It would have destroyed itself. So anyway, I'm that guy. And even in the first
one, quit being a physics teacher and enjoy a movie, John.
The first one they talk about how long it's gonna take to get for the Star Trek the Enterprise to Vulcan. It's gonna take it's like 15 minutes. And then later when they're coming back, it's like 17 hours. It's like is it slower one way? Is there a jet stream one way through space? I don't know. It's fine. But I really like the reboot. I like the characters. I'm not as big of a Benedict Cumberbatch fan as a lot of people are. I like him in, I've liked the Sherlock stuff, but he's been okay for me in other stuff, but I haven't seen him in everything, but I'm just not as in love with him as a lot of other people are. So, but I'll go see Doctor Strange for sure.
Damn right. And while we're talking on box office, just in case anyone's wondering, week two of the new season of Fantasy Movie League is in the books. Tyler won again, is commandingly in the lead.
It was a close week. We were all within 3 million, right? Yeah. Or was it 6 million?
I honestly couldn't tell you. I just know that I won again.
So. Yes, yes, yes. You won again. You won with 60. Yeah, we're all within 3.5 million of each other.
Okay.
Yeah, this week, close. And then total, we're within 10 million, the three of us, at least, anyway. John, if you want to get in on some Fantasy Movie League, Tyler and I need some more opponents. It's just us.
It's the Adam Ann and Tyler show, because everyone else apparently has stopped playing, which, I mean, is understandable.
They're losing to the three of us, right? Yeah.
It's just understandable from a certain standpoint, because we are dominating them. Me more so than the other two, but still me, mostly. But, so I don't know. I don't know. We've touched the movies. I don't know. What else is going on? What's going on in comics, Mr. Holloway, Mr. Worst
Comic? Yeah, John. Let's talk some comics for a bit.
Yeah, so DC is doing their big rebirth thing, and that was I managed to avoid spoilers before the big DC Universe rebirth issue. I was glad that I did, because when I got to the big reveal, I was like, wow. Like, I did not see that coming. And a lot of other people had it spoiled for them. I did have the you know, shocker scenes in Star Wars Force Awakens ruined for me. But that was fine. I got over it. It was still good. But this one was a big deal. And so, not to spoil it, but it's been a couple weeks. So, come on. DC took the Watchmen. That's the big reveal at the end of Rebirth, is that the Watchmen universe is crossing over with the main DC universe. And if you'd have told me that, just that, I'd have said, I'm out. I'm done. Forget it.
Right.
But not knowing it's coming, it works so well. Like, it all makes sense when it gets to it.
Is Alan Moore in a corner somewhere with just blood gushing out of his eye sockets? Like, is he just...
He has been forever.
I know, but I feel like this is like... There's some things that Alan Moore gets upset about. This is a whole nother level right here. This next level.
I don't even know if it is anymore. Because they did before Watchmen. And, I even think at that point, he was just... He comes out of his cave and sees his shadow and... And it's six more weeks of him being grumpy. But, I love Alan Moore. I love the guy's writing and everything, obviously. But he is who he is. He ain't going to change. But the whole gist of it is that when the new 52 happened, and even somewhat before then, that there's been this darkness that's been permeating the DC universe. And things are wrong. It's not a very even concealed tongue in cheek of DC criticizing itself for taking the DC universe and making everything dark and saying, you know what, we kind of fell in love with the Watchmen model of dark, gritty adult comics where no one is happy and everyone leads an unsuccessful life and everyone's just blah, blah. And so we've rolled that in, and we've even made statements where, well, we're not going to have superhero characters that are married because married is happy. Whatever you want to lay that into that. but we don't want happy characters. And Dan DiDio said that. And so I think this is them saying, you know, we've done this. There's something infecting the universe. And then at the end, you get this little reveal that somehow Dr. Manhattan is what has jacked up the DC universe. But they're not doing it as a, like, the next... So this was DC Rebirth, and then they're going to have all these Rebirth issues that launch characters' new books. So there's going to be a Batman Rebirth and an Action Comics Rebirth and a Superman Rebirth, but they're spread out over the next, like, 3 or 4 months. And so, after these, we're going to get Superman's book and Aquaman's book and the Flash's book, and those books are now, most of those books are going to now be twice a month instead of once a month, which is a big, you know, obviously that means you're going to have alternating artists. So it's going to be interesting how they play that. And the other aspect is all their titles are going to be $2.99. So every book is going to have a $2.99 cover price, which is $1 or $2 cheaper than most of the Marvel books. Which I think is interesting. I don't know how many people buy books. I won't buy an $8.99 issue very often, but I'll buy a $3.99 or $4.99. It's $1 or $2. You know, I'm a grown man. I've got a couple other bucks to spare. But if you're, budgeting out, that could make a big difference. So, so they're going to have these Wonder Woman, Flash, Aquaman, Superman, Green Lantern. All those are kind of starting right up. Titans, which is going to be the Wally West, Dick Grayson, Donna Troy. Some of those characters have not appeared in New 52 and now are back. And it's not going to be for a couple more months that we're going to start getting Suicide Squad, Deathstroke. I mean, Suicide Squad is going to be rebirthed right about the time the movie comes out. You don't want to miss that.
Right. Yeah. That makes sense.
Yeah. And then Cyborg, Teen Titans, the younger version, now a younger version of the Teen Titans. So anyway, I think they're taking their time. They've even said there's going to be more rebirths. We're going to have Legion of Superheroes and some of those. But Geoff Johns has said, we're not going to push it out all at once and try to rush it. We're going to take our time, do a few, get those out, get those rolling, and do some more and some more, which I think is a smart way to do it. And take time and do it right. We'll see.
So it's still a little early to know like exactly what direction they're going. But when you say cross it over with the Watchmen universe, is it, you know, mainly Dr. Manhattan and just that universe, or is it specifically, you know, those Watchmen characters? Is this a crossover with Watchmen post the actual Watchmen book? Like, do they need to find out an excuse to be able to put Rorschach in these, or what's what are we doing here?
That's a good question, and I don't know the answer to that yet. Tyler, DC does, but I don't. But we did see there was a little teaser at the end of Justice League, and we didn't know it at the time, where a couple of characters, Metron and Owlman, who you may not necessarily know, but they kind of blow up in the same way that Dr. Manhattan blew up Rorschach at the end of Watchmen. But we don't know who did it at that point. It was just somebody blows them up. And there's certainly plenty of people who could do that. And then we, at the very end, there's kind of this Wally West who's just been brought out of the Speed Force by Barry Allen, these two Flashes. It's Wally West that's revealing all this stuff that's happened. There's been a darkness and it's permeated everything. And Flash has thrown a couple names and kid, you know, Wally West like, no, somebody way more powerful than that. And at the time we see Batman is digging, he sees something in the back of the cave that's by this note that was brought to him from the Flashpoint Paradox universe. And he's scratching and he pulls out and it's the comedian's button. And for some reason it is behind the wall. And that's the first thing that you get that tells you that it's Watchmen. And it's a page turn, him holding it. And it's like, holy, like chills. Like, I cannot believe they did that. And then you turn the page and they go to, and it's on Mars. And there's this watch that you see being assembled back together again by some telekinetic force or whatever. And then you realize, oh, on the cover of DC Rebirth, where all the heroes are coming out and there's a hand and it's in lightning and it's whitish blue. And you just think it's because of the lightning. And you realize it's Dr. Manhattan. That's what's happening. So I don't know how they're going to resolve all that. None of the rebirth issues, except maybe the Flash, I think might touch on it. None of the other stuff kind of explains what's going on there. So I'm curious to see, I don't know if we're going to kind of get rebirthed and then, we'll clean up the afterbirth and then we'll get into what's happening there with Dr. Manhattan. I don't know. So I don't know if we're going to see all the other characters spill over or just Dr. Manhattan or what's up, but
I really hope, and Geoff Johns, if you're listening, and we know you are, really hope that all of those issue ones are so-and-so rebirth, and then their issue twos are so-and-so afterbirth, because that would, that would just be the best
thing. I mean, as fan service-y as it is, I don't understand the point of crossing over with Watchmen if I don't get more Rorschach and more comedian. I mean, I feel like that's the whole point, isn't it?
I hear you. I think the point is just to recognize the role and the effect that Watchmen had on comics and especially in the DC universe, and to say we want to walk that back. Watchmen is great, but Watchmen isn't great if everything's Watchmen.
Yeah. Well, and Watchmen at its core was almost a critique on comic books up to that point, and superheroes specifically. So.
Oh, yeah. No, totally. 100%.
Well, and I think comics are for, you know, like all other media, they're an escape from what we do on the daily.
Mm-hmm.
And then the Watchmen kind of holding that up and being like, no, it's your everything is still kind of crappy. even when you're reading 28 pages, things aren't super great for you. And it was kind of an escape from comics. But like you said, it's not, it doesn't work if it is the only thing that's out there.
Right. Yeah. Everyone's flawed and everyone sucks and all your heroes are really, really selfish assholes. That's really the heart of it. And I don't want to read all, I don't want all my comics to read like that. I'd like some actual super, superheroes, you know, bigger than life, actual worried about justice and not getting in someone's pants.
Right. Don't give me a Justice League where all the members of the Justice League are more concerned with other things than justice. Like that.
Right.
That just, it's another thing that doesn't just quite fit for me.
Right. And they all have conflicting viewpoints, which is fine to have different viewpoints, but that they all, like, I don't want to see infighting every issue. Like, come on, let's, like, can we?
What do you all have to be upset about? Your sweet superheroes with a floating space station. What the? Get it together. Your lives are pretty sweet.
Right, exactly. Yeah, even Bruce. I mean, come on. It was a long time ago, man. Move past it. Bad stuff happens to everybody. You know whose parents die? Almost everyone's. Almost everyone's. Before we get some counseling. Okay? Funnel that cash to something a little more productive. I'm just saying. All those gadgets cost a lot of money. Maybe we could invest in some infrastructure for Gotham. That's all I'm saying.
Come on, let's do some humanitarian stuff or something.
Yeah, on the Marvel side, we got Civil War is the big thing coming up. So Civil War, I just feel like it hasn't been that long since Civil War One. Like, let's, especially we just had the movie Civil War. Now we're going to Civil War Two. It's just a lot of Civil Warring. Like, it's one thing for a small group of heroes not to get along, but do we, like, the big giant thing and they all fight? Like, I just feel like there's a solution that we could work out without
having. It's only been, 10 years since the original Civil War? That was 06, wasn't it? 07?
Blows my mind that it's even been that long. It doesn't even feel like that long.
It doesn't. Yeah. I mean, I don't know. Are they going back to that well because of the Civil War movie or for other reasons? Like, are they using, because obviously, I mean, I'm a huge fan of Carol Danvers's Miss Marvel.
Yeah.
Or, I mean, Captain Marvel. Right. Captain Marvel now. But I don't know if this is just, you know, softening the ground for that movie that is then coming, like get her up front and center to something to base it off of. For the first time in maybe the history of Marvel Comics, Iron Man's apparently not the giant asshole bad guy, like for the first time in quite some time. So.
Yeah, that it remains to be seen, but I'm sure even if he's on the right side, he'll still be a dick about it. So it's what he does. Well, that was my take on Civil War on the movie. It was, I felt like Iron Man was doing the right thing. He was on the right side for the wrong reasons, and Captain America was on the wrong side for the right reasons. But that, yeah.
I feel like Vision sits them down at a table and just says, nobody, you know, clamps them down.
You're both wrong.
You're not. Neither of you are leaving. Quit being a jerk. Quit being an idiot. Cool. We're good. Let's move on with this.
Moving on.
Right.
No, I know. And like, and at the same time, as bad as that, I mean, as contrived as that whole setup was with Slovakia Accords and stuff like that, it still had a slightly better. It definitely felt like it had more heft than the actual conflict between Tony and Steve in the original Civil War comic books. Like, that was ham-fisted as humanly possible. And then the wrap-up before it was bad. I don't know. I still loved the Civil War movie. If for another reason, then it reinforced that, I don't care what anyone says, the biggest badass in the Avengers MCU is still Hawkeye. He just does what he does and gives no shits what anyone else thinks.
Yeah, but I do feel like for him at the end where he's like, or when he's in jail, you know, he's in prison now and Iron Man's like, and he's like, oh, I'm in, you know, you're keeping me from my wife and kid. I'm like, dude, he's right. You did walk into that. Like, you could have just stayed home. You could have phoned that in and just said, you know, Cap, I don't think I do have a wife and kids. Maybe I shouldn't get on the wrong side of 160 some different countries.
Well, my kid was playing with the bow. I'm not sure where he put it. I'll see if I can find it.
I'd come with you, but I just, you know, don't wanna.
Right. He's getting an early start on being Hawkman 2, since we're really gonna need that, since I'm gonna be in prison here pretty soon.
Yeah. I don't know. his scene of just like taking down Vision and being like, all right, let's roll. It was pretty fantastic. I don't know. I don't care what anyone says. I love Jeremy Renner's Hawkeye.
Oh, no, no. It was great. If anything, it was kind of, we didn't really, I don't think I ever really totally knew why he was there other than Cap asked him to.
He's so Hawkeye. He does what he wants.
He's Captain America's biatch, but that's fine. I know. I get it.
I would be Captain America's biatch too.
Yeah, yeah, no. Well, and we were talking about that. Well, it's funny. It's Captain America's even movie, but it's a Civil War movie. So did you hear some, there was some beef from Haley Atwell was talking about how weird it was for Cap to have the kiss with Sharon Carter because her aunt was his original, you know, love interest. In the first Captain America movie, they go to her funeral. He's even kind of making eyes at her niece at the funeral. And then later on, they've got a kiss, and Haley Atwell's like, it's just weird that he was with Peggy, and now he's making time with the niece. It's just a little odd. It's a little creepy. But a lot of people think their whole reason they had that kiss, because it's so out of nowhere. The only reason is because they want people to get off the Captain America Winter Soldier bromance. They don't want people to think that they're... Okay, can we stop wanting to make Captain America Winter Soldier gay? That's not going to happen, guys. In the movie, that's not going to happen. You can write all the fan fiction you want, and I know that you are. But that is not going to happen.
Yeah. At the same time, like, she was, to be fair, in the comics, she was the niece, but that was retcon because originally she was the younger sister because
correct.
Of aging and stuff. But at the same time, like...
But it's been awkward
in the comics when they brought her back and she became the love interest, like, it was made very clear that not only was she the niece of Peggy Carter, that she looked almost exactly like Peggy Carter, which made it even, I think, wilder. At least Sharon Carter and Peggy Carter in the movies don't, like, look alike. That would, I think, right. make it a little worse.
Yeah, yeah, but there is a little of loving you is wrong, I don't want to be right. Because it is a little bit weird. Because she's not even in the ground yet. I mean, come on. Give it a little time. But yeah, originally she was the sister, and then she was the niece, and now, you know, eventually she'll be the grandniece, because we have to have Captain America during World War II, but it's going to be 2030, and it's... There's no way that she's still the niece, so we'll have to youngify her. Although it's weird now because they re-younged Captain America. Oh, that's the other big crap storm that was the Captain.
That you also did not see coming.
Yeah, I didn't see that coming, but it didn't bother me as much as it. Well, to me, it's.
I made a swing at the pun and missed poorly.
No, it's fine. I didn't. It didn't bother me. That one didn't bother me. Like, I know everyone's up in arms about the Captain Hydra thing. It's a plot twist that'll come around and there'll be an explanation for it. Like, he's been a Nazi two or three times before. Hell, he was a werewolf. I mean, he was the man without a country. He's been everything. The guy's been around for a long time. Like, this is going to get explained. I'm not worried about Captain America. Like, I don't think we're going to see him taking out Anne Frank in issue 2 of Captain America. Like, I'm not that worried about what's going to happen. I think this is going to get tidied up. We'll see. But
yeah, I know that, I mean, I don't know. Every time something like this happened to a main character who turned, you know, complete 180 bad, like, if this was the reaction every time, like, never, no comic books would ever get made, ever.
Right. And I had people say, oh, man, I heard this deal about Captain America. I bet Captain America sales went down. I'm like, no.
They went up. Well, the thing is sometimes, like, even though you immediately, like, go anti against, like we talked about last week a little bit when, you know, remember that one time that for a really long time they killed Peter Parker and put one of his worst enemies inside of his body and let him be right. Spider-Man? People lost their minds. The problem was it was such a good comic. Like, superior... Superior Spider-Man was so good. I was almost angry at how good it was.
Yeah, no, I thought Slott nailed it. I thought it was absolutely fantastic, Dan Slott, the writer. I loved it. It was a fun, different take. You're like, well, I just want to read the same Peter Parker stories. They're there. You've got 60 years of them.
It's a book. It doesn't go anywhere. You can pick it up. You can set it down. You can walk away for 8 months. You can go back. It's going to be sitting right where you left it because it's a book, and you can pick it up again. You can read it. Go right ahead.
They're all there. None of them got erased. They still exist. Yeah, around people, we're gonna retcon something. It's like, you mean those stories never happened? They didn't ever happen. It's fiction. Like, they still did. They didn't happen before, and they still didn't happen. Galactus still didn't come and threaten to swallow the Earth. Like, it still didn't happen. But it was, if it was a great story, was it only a great story because it ties into every other story over 60 years, or was it a great story on its own? If it wasn't a great story on its own, then it's still not great.
So are we just going to erase? We can go back and erase one more day, though, right? That's okay.
Cool. One more day was stupid.
I think we're running up against time. So let's, I don't know, anything else big we need to touch on? I was excited about it once upon a time, and I have since fallen off the wagon. Warcraft comes out this weekend. Anyone care?
I don't, because I'm not a Warcraft guy, but for some reason, I think people are going to go see that movie. I don't know. Those kind of comic book or video game sort of tie-in things, I don't know. Because I think so many people out there who don't know Warcraft are going to be like, I'm not really interested in giant goblins or whatever. But it looks better made than I would have thought the Warcraft. Because I figure, okay, it's Warcraft. We can crap out whatever. We'll put the name Warcraft on it. And all the Warcraft people will come see it. And those are the only people who are going to go see it. So why make it good? Who cares? We'll get our ticket sales. But it looks, I actually think the production or whatever value of it looks surprisingly good.
Yeah, I don't know. I've heard the early reviews have been, I guess, mixed at best. There's definitely a lot of fan service to the WoW community, like the World of Warcraft fans. And I was a WoW player, like I was a WoW, but I also played Warcraft 1, 2, and 3. And this is basically the story of Warcraft 1. I don't know. I don't know if I have as much as it's become what we go and see. We go see a big blockbuster movie. We're going to get a lot of CGI, but I don't know if I have the stamina for that much CGI.
A lot of CGI.
So much only, I mean, half the entire cast is just CGI. So I don't know if I can do that.
Yeah. I'm worried they're getting caught in two minds, Tyler, and playing service to the folks, paying service to the folks who played 1, 2, and 3, and paying service to the folks who only played WoW. Because there are a ton of people you can talk to about World of Warcraft that have zero idea about Warcraft 1, 2, and 3. And so I'm worried that, you know, if you hold true to the Warcraft 1 story, that you basically just alienate all the WoW people. And if you try to then you piss off the Warcraft 1, 2, and 3 people that are huge WoW fans.
Yeah, but whatever this most recent, what's the most recent, whatever the most recent expansion, Warlords of Draenor, that kind of went back to some of that stuff. And I'm sure there were some raids at some point or some dungeons that filled you in on a little bit of the backstory.
Right. Yeah.
But yeah, I get that. And then the sequel that I don't understand, Now You See Me Too, that I will still probably see at some point, just because as much as I was upset at the ending of the first one, I really liked the first one.
And what don't you understand? That movie made a bunch of money.
Yeah. And then Adam will obviously be going to see The Conjuring 2. So.
Yes, that is true. All those movies are coming out this weekend.
I'm going to spend
a lot of time in the movie theater.
Pretty sure all three of those come out. Is that this weekend? Opening this week. Conjuring 2, Warcraft, Now You See Me 2. Yep, all three open this weekend. So
that's not good.
Well, I'll be in your old neck of the woods, fellas. I'll be at Smallville Comic Con.
That's right. That's the coming up this weekend, isn't it?
Yep. So excited to be there. We'll be moderating some panels and having a good time, seeing lots of friends. So looking forward to it.
And that's in Hutchinson, Kansas?
Correct.
Yeah, Hutch.
Not for the weekend. For the weekend, it'll be Smallville. In fact, they have the because they have a proclamation the city council made a proclamation declaring the city officially Smallville for the weekend. The U.S. Post Office will actually be set up at Smallville Comic-Con, and you can get, if you get a postcard to send, the cancellation thing will actually say Smallville instead of Hutchinson for the weekend.
Oh my God, I need to almost go just for that purpose.
Yeah, Tyler, it's not that far. You definitely should make that happen, dude.
Send me a postcard. What days is it? Friday and
Saturday. Saturday.
I mean, I'm off work Friday. Curious.
I'm sorry. It's Saturday, Sunday. It's Saturday.
Nope. Can't do it. Got to work. I got to work through because the weekend after that, we'll be in Denver for DenverCon.
Right.
Project Myrtle. So
send me your address. I'll send you a postcard.
There you go. And then what else? And we got Comic-Con coming up even almost.
About a month.
Less than a month or just over a month from now. So
like 4 weeks, something like that. Pretty close.
Maybe. Cool. Well, more cons to come, I guess.
Yeah, look forward to seeing you guys there again. So.
Cool. Let's do some final thoughts, I guess. Who wants to start us off? Adam, what do you got?
Final thoughts. I'm reading a lot of books. I'm still reading a lot of books. I have so many books. Because we go to these conventions and Tyler's like, hey, here's a good book. Hey, here's a good book. And I'm like, awesome. I will read that book. And then books that I want to read get released. And so please pick up books, read books. It really is important, you guys. If you're in the Midwest, what is that? World Book Con, Tyler?
It's the World Fantasy Convention, but each year, depending on where it's at, it's either World Con when it's international, or each city has its own name. So this year it's Midwest Con. It's technically Midwest Con 2, because this will be the second time the World Fantasy Convention or World Fantasy Awards were given out in Kansas City.
Right. So,
I think it's Mid-America.
There you go. Mid-America.
Yeah, Mid-America, right.
Mid-America, and it's where they hand out the Hugo Awards, which if you are a speculative fiction fan at all, that the Hugo Award is huge. Like it's a
big name, right.
Hugo, it's really the Hugo, the Nebula, and that's kind of the two big ones.
And if I can give a little plug, we, on our show that comes out this Friday, so I think that's the 10th, so Worst Comic Podcast Ever will be episode 102. We've got an interview with some of the organizers of Mid-Americon 2, Jeff Smith.
Nice.
We were right next to them at Planet Comic Con. And so we talked to them. It's not billed. The signs all say Mid-Americon 2. And I think, oh, it's another, I didn't know what it was at first. I'm like, oh, it's another one of these little cons. We got cons all over the place. And then it's like, you read the fine print. It's little tiny letters. World Science Fiction, you know, and I'm like, what? That's the undercard on that? Put that up top. You're not billing that well. But yeah, they got a huge list of creators who are going to be here. It's at Bartle Hall. It's the weekend right after Kansas City Comic Con. So I'm looking forward. And it's like a 5-day con. It's like Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. So it's a big show. But Kansas City Comic Con's the weekend before. So I'll be a little drained when that comes around. I'm excited, though. It'll be cool to be there.
Yeah. It is confusing, but for all intents and purposes, if you Mid-America Con 2 really means World Con, like 74, you know,
right.
It's World Con. And if you're a fantasy reader, you know, it's exciting.
Yeah. And I've been obviously reading. I'm always reading lots of comics because we have all these electronic platforms. Then we have some companies that send us stuff and I can't, like Valiant sends us their stuff and I'm trying to keep up with it. But it's tough all the time. But I've read a couple of books by Gwenda Bond. If you are looking for something for your kid to read, especially a daughter, she's got a couple of Lois Lane novels, young adult novels, Lois Lane in high school, that are really pretty cool. They're a good read. They're listed as like for high school, but I would say even more middle school is probably where I would say. But they're good reads, a lot of fun, a lot of little Superman stuff. And I also throw out obviously, the world lost Muhammad Ali. I was a big fan of his, and you know, not just as a fighter, but his civil rights work, his social justice work, and I think he was a very, very important voice across sports and politics and culture and everything. And one of my favorite comics as a kid, although it's not quite as smooth reading now, was the Superman versus Muhammad Ali giant size comic that came out. It was cool because the cover had a whole bunch of different comic book people, creators, but also just social people. I mean, it's like, you know, Sonny and Cher and the audience, you know, like all these people watching the big Superman Muhammad Ali fight. That was a big thing this week, obviously.
But I think that's probably it. We've gone probably over what we should have. So Iggy's going to have to edit this, but I'm sure we made plenty of noises that he was going to have to edit out anyway. But thank you everyone for joining us. A big, big thanks to our friend John Holloway for joining us.
Yay.
For
responding.
You should also, in addition to listening to the Nerdcast, listen to the Worst Comic Podcast Ever. Because it's a lot of fun, especially if you like the comic stuff.
Right.
John was throwing out here. And you should go down to Smallville Con this weekend and say hi.
Yeah, totally. We're at booth 40-something, 70. I don't know. It's not that big. It's not a big con. Walk around. We'll have a sign, Worst Comic Podcast Ever. So, yeah, we're somewhere. I haven't looked. There's a couple people I don't want to be next to, and we're not next to them, so it's all good.
But if they also want to, you know, for instance, say, I don't know, partake of your guys' sweet, sweet podcast, it is at worstcomicpodcastever.com. Am I correct?
That is correct. And Facebook, you can search Facebook Worst Comic Podcast Ever. We're there. We'd love to have new listeners. Yeah, and if you like comics, that's what we do.
Awesome. Well, John, as always, it's a pleasure to talk with you. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks a lot, guys. Appreciate the invite.
Go check out Worst Comic Podcast Ever. Otherwise, you will see me, Adam, and hopefully the rest of the podcast crew back soonish.
Who knows next week? Yeah.
Who knows? We'll see. Maybe it's just Adam and I again with another sweet guest.
There you go.
Adam and I are troopers. Like, we're just killing it. We're just doing it, killing it. But anyway, next week, same nerd time, same nerd channel. Thanks for joining us. This has been the Nerdcast from Project Nerd. See ya.